improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
Henry Ford Community College has a medical practice clinical management degree program that will prepare you for a rewarding career in the exciting field of healthcare. You can earn a certificate as a medical office assistant or a two-year degree in medical office management. For more information, give us a call at 800-585-HFCC.
Think you have what it takes? We do. Henry Ford Community College. Visit us online at hfcc.edu.
When was the last time someone told you to get twanged? Join me, Tom, as I roll down the Lost Highway on the first and third Saturday of each month from 10 a.m. to noon. Here I'll play the latest in local and national alternative country, folk, or anything else that has a twang. Don't forget, the Lost Highway on Saturday mornings with me, Tom, on the only station making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
Disclaimer, this show is a WHFR talk show presentation. The opinions expressed by WHFR staff and our guests are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, administrators, anyone on our board of trustees, or students.
Welcome to the Heights News and Views, a talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs presented from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented live on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You are listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can hear all of our archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm. Select the option Forum. Wait for the option to select that Tuesday date for the program that you wish to hear by selecting the desired date. Now, to your host and director, Ned Apigian, for today's program.
Thank you, Melissa. Unfortunately, I have a terrible cold, and I am not going to sound nice today, but hopefully I won't have to talk too much. Our guests today are the City Controller, Vince Macari, City Assessor, Barb McDermott, and our Human Resource Director, Elizabeth Sabota Perry. And before we begin asking them questions, I'm going to let them talk about themselves, something about their background. So let's begin with Barb, since she's closer to the mic. And tell us something about yourself, your background and experience, Barb.
Okay. My name is Barb McDermott. I am the assessor for the City of Dearborn Heights. I started for the City of Dearborn Heights in June of 2008. Prior to working in Dearborn Heights, I worked for Oakland County Equalization Department in their personal property department for 10 years. During that 10 years, I took numerous classes through the State Tax Commission prior to coming to Dearborn Heights. And then when I got to Dearborn Heights, I completed my courses with the State Tax Commission. I am a Level 4 assessor for the state, and Other than work, I have a busy home life. I have a family of 5 children. So that keeps me busy along with work.
Well, thank you, Barbara. That's 5 children, Lord have mercy. I hope they're all big.
Most of them are.
Vince, how about you?
Yeah, my name is Vince McCary, and I'm the controller for the city of Dearborn Heights. I started that job actually March 1st of this year. Prior to that, I was the deputy controller with the city, and I hired in 97 as the deputy treasurer. Prior to that, I worked for Smart Transportation, and prior to that with Detroit Coca-Cola, all in the accounting field. Graduated from University of Michigan Dearborn, but I did start my college career here at Henry Ford.
All right. Yeah, Henry Ford.
Way back in 1975, so.
That's and, nothing. I began mine in the Miller School in 1959.
So I'm glad to be here.
And we're glad to have you. Elizabeth, our human resource director.
Okay, so a little bit about myself is that I talk a lot. I've been the city human resource director since February of 2007, and prior to that I worked at AAA headquarters, and I've been a part of the Henry Ford Community College campus for the last 6 years teaching adjunct math. So that's where I spend my evenings, walking past the radio station.
And you never listening to it.
I don't have time. I have 2 jobs.
I announced at our council meeting that I definitely was going to learn something with this program, but I didn't know Elizabeth taught math. Yep. Lord have mercy. And her husband is on the staff, political science staff here.
So we're both here quite often.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get a job here myself in my old age. Amen. Anyway, okay, let's begin. Here's the way we'll do this so that it's easier for your microphone. We can either talk about one subject at a time and then banter between us, and then maybe go through some numbers. So I'm going to ask our audience to get a piece of paper and pencil, because it's hard to keep track of things. The whole purpose of this is so that you can get an idea, in terms of the city's budget, where we were in 2008 before the world came to an earthquake. It's not that the earthquake didn't happen before, it's just nobody told us. And then what's changed from the 2008-09 budget to the 2009-10 budget, and the 2010-11, and the budget we're currently in, or the fiscal year we're in. All of you are not dealing with budgets, so to speak. And then in the end, we'll say, what does all this mean for 2012 and 2013? Hopefully some of these simple numbers that we will get will translate to you what's been going on with us. Like if we had 300 employees at one time and now we have 200, you have an idea of what we're doing, what's happening, how the city's trying to save money. And of course, you can only save so much money, you have to operate the place. Unfortunately, most of these leaders that are around this table operate I want them to talk about how they operate pretty much alone with very few people. No other city probably does as good a job about that that we do. So I'm going to ask each one to tell us these basic numbers for those fiscal years, and you mark them down, and then we'll go back and talk about them so that we'll have an idea where we're going. So, Barb, you might want to begin by what our total assessment dollar amount for the 2008 year was, and then for each one you can indicate how far down it's come. So that, in simple terms, we don't complicate. So the average listener says, oh, my God. Go ahead. 2008-09, what was our situation? How would you like to characterize it?
All right. 2008, if you wanted to talk about assessed values, which really isn't what the dollars are calculated on. It's the value of the home.
So why don't we use the taxable?
You want to use the taxable, so we talk about
because
the dollars
that the number that
city actually
cares about.
Okay. So in 2008, there was approximately $1.6 billion that were taxable. And now we're down to, for 2011, it has dropped down to $1.3 billion, approximately. I'm just rounding them up, actually.
Can you do it by year? Like in 2009, 1.6?
You want each year?
Yeah, so they can
watch a trend. Okay, 2008 was 1.6, 2009, 1.5, 2010, 1.3, and now for 11, we're at 1.2. It's actually 1.18. I mean, we're just under 1.2.
No, that's good, the 2.
Okay, that way it's easy to see.
What would you think is going to happen in 2012?
I would think that we will reduce a little bit further, probably down to 1.1.
1.1.
Mm-hmm.
This reduction that you see, and I'm sure, Jay, might want to say something about this in regards to Dearborn. Is that normal next to what we know about other communities? Are we doing pretty good, or is this drop to be expected? It seems like it's kind of progressing very evenly.
With other communities, we do compare with other communities. I always look at the other communities to see where we relate to them, and we are having approximately the same moves that they are, communities of our size and with our same commercial and industrial base.
So this is happening to everybody.
Yes, definitely.
It's not that our mayor is a fool and our council is stupid or we're not doing what we can do.
I don't think they have any control over what's going on.
We have absolutely no control over
absolutely none. The numbers speak for themselves.
Now, the anticipated drawdown, which I would call this, we expect this to continue for, in your estimation, how many more years before it levels off?
I would say three.
Three more.
Hopefully, I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
you know.
If you would have asked
me,
I would have been.
Maybe three that will flatten out. How long we'll stay flat, I can't tell you, but I'm
so
hoping that it would be in about 3 years. We'll see a little drop this year, a little more next year, and hopefully by the third year, we'll be close to flat.
Elizabeth, Jay Koronek here, and station advisor. And I just jump in. And just for our listeners' sake, too, assessed value of home, what are the factors there? Is just you just look at what people are selling their homes for in that neighborhood? Is that the only issue? Your office goes and looks at like things like improvements, too, in property. And if somebody adds, I don't know, garage or patio or something, the value of that property might go up, and so your office is involved in setting that. So those are two things I can think of. Anything else about property values that you look at or that influences the picture?
We do look at all the sales in the property. We look at any improvements that have done or any losses also. Losses also do affect, I mean, in a negative impact on it. So we'll look at that if anything. Mm-hmm. Has affected that way. We also, other than the residential, we will look at the movement in retail and business, commercial and industrial, to see where that's going also. And that, too, we'll look at the sales of those properties. Also, when we look at their income to see how they're doing in this economy to base their value.
So obviously you don't have any control over what houses are selling for. That's the issue.
Absolutely
that really brings things down there. I mean,
no control. All I do is report what's going on out there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's an interesting thing. People would come up to me and say, especially during this recent campaign season, I would be selling the millage by telling people, I don't think this thing is being characterized correctly. In my own home, I think my taxes came down $400 this taxable year. And if the millage was in effect last year, I would have saved $250 instead of $400. I would have given back about $150,000. Actually, you're not giving, you're not costing you more, you're not giving anything back. It's just that you would have saved $250. a lot of people came up to me and said, my taxes went up. And I said, how could that be? Do you have an explanation for that? So some of the listeners may have the same question.
It depends on where your house is as far as your assessed and taxable value. As they close the gap between your assessed and taxable, your taxes could go up. They actually could.
I see.
Okay.
So the assessed value is what you think the market value is based on sales and some sort of hard facts you can put your finger on.
Correct.
And the taxable value is 50% of that number?
The state equalized value is 50% of that. Then you have your taxable value, which goes up by the consumer price index each year. So
okay,
it will
so
only move by...
So the taxable value is higher than the SEV state?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No, it's not higher. It can't go higher than that. It's capped.
Right. Yeah, I thought you said the opposite.
No. Good thing you clarified that.
Yeah. Otherwise, I don't care what you call it, as long as mine keeps coming down. I can afford an addition in the future.
Well, that, just to say, that was a revelation to me, Elizabeth. I never heard that the consumer price index would have anything to do with the amount you're paying in property taxes. I mean, that was one of those variables that I was asking about, too.
Right. Your taxable value, it only can go up CPI each year.
So
okay, so if your assessed value comes down lower than that, then your taxable becomes the assessed. It's the lower of the taxable going up by CPI or the assessed. It's whichever is the lowest.
Of the two.
Right.
Your assessed value,
where you had said 50% of it, your assessed is 50% of the market value.
Okay, so and where does the 50%, does it work in the CPI factor?
No. It's the 50% of the market value is your assessed value. That your taxable is the lower of that assessed value or the prior year's taxable value increased by CPI. Whichever of those is lower would become your next
Remember
year's
that,
taxable
Jay,
value.
Remember that, Jay, the prior year's taxable value.
Right. You have
See
to...
That? Write that down.
Right.
Anyway... And we've taken about a little bit of time on that we wanted to. And then before we go on to ask Vince the same thing by years, I'm going to take a minute to do our required reintroducing all of you, even though we're a little early, but it works out fine because before we go to Vince... You are listening to News and Views of Dearborn Heights, presented on the fifth Tuesday in any month as a part of the WHFR Forum talk show format, presented every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. Our guests today are Dearborn Heights Controller Vince Marcari, Assessor Barb McDermott, and Human Resource Director Elizabeth Sabota Perry. We are broadcasting on WHFR at 89.3 FM, making waves from the studios of the Henry Ford Community College, and I am your host, Ned Apigian. Now, Vince, tell us, let's go into 2008, and just as Barb did for those 5 years as to her...
Yeah.
Our budget, see what you...
Yeah. Our biggest problem as a city, I consider it a revenue problem because of, based on the assessed values of the homes and stuff, that's really affected our property tax revenues, which is our biggest revenue area. But in the 2008-2009 year, we were at $9.6 million for city operating and public safety revenue, public safety going to help run the police department, the fire department, and also DPW services. And that dropped down to about $7 million in 2012. So that's a reduction of about $2.6 million over the last 4 years.
What was that number again? 2012?
About $7 million.
Mm-hmm. Property taxes, yeah.
Correct. Now, in addition to this, our second largest revenue... Go ahead.
Could you do like she did by year so we could watch it?
2010 was $8.9 million, and 2011 was about $7.6 million. So it's dropped pretty consistent.
In the same fashion?
Yeah, pretty close. Now, in addition to... Go ahead.
Yeah, it's similar.
In addition to...
Our statutory and constitutional state...
That's what I was going to get into next. Yeah. In addition, our second largest revenue area is the state shared revenue. And that's actually dropped from 2009. It's going back to 2008-09, it was at $5.5 million.
Yeah.
2010 dropped to $4.9 million. 2011, $4.8 million. And this year it would be about $4.1 million. So that's $1.5 million, $1.5 million roughly over the last 4 years. But you really have to go back further in this area, I think.
Okay.
Because back in 2001, we actually received $7.7 million in state shared revenue in the combination of constitutional and statutory. So that's like a $3 million loss in the last 10 years.
Vince, this is Jay Cornick again. You're referring to Act 345? Is that the state?
No. There's a line item called State Shared Revenue. Halfway down.
That's an expense.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it says Revenue, Act 345.
That revenue is to fund the police and fire pensions.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But if you go down half, I believe halfway down that page, you'll find State Shared Revenue or...
Oh, it's way... Yeah, it's... Yeah. Okay, I see it. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, it's a big number. I don't know why I missed that. Yes. Yeah.
Well,
So that's actually gone up. Well, no, it hasn't.
No, it's been down.
It keeps going down. Yeah. I looked at the partial for 2011, but yeah. $4 million. Now that's been decreasing, and that's
pretty
just up to the state.
Pretty consistent for the last 10 years.
And the state uses what formula in that? Just politics?
There is a formula for the constitutional piece, and that by law they have to give to us. The statutory is kind of discretionary on their part.
That's an important thing for our listeners to understand, Jay. It is Governor Snyder has this two parts of the money. You know, when they said cities can't have sales taxes anymore, this proposal one and that whole business of going from 4% to 6%, and then we'll guarantee your property taxes don't rise up, the Headley Amendment and all that. So Detroit, though, they were getting money back from the state instead of the way we used to do it. Now, as I understand it, the constitutional part, which is guaranteed, or I don't know what the formula is, the statutory part, as I understand, the governor from our state reps is really playing a serious game with that, either taking it away from us entirely. The hard cap on the medical is one of the things he's threatening us with. Sure. I'd like to have Vince explain that. Because we're talking about serious money that we're losing because of it.
Yeah, it really changed this year as far as qualifying for the statutory or the EVIP, they call it now, the EVIP.
What's that stand for? It'd be interesting.
Mm. And basically, I think there are three areas. One was the word... slips my mind now. Transparency, there we go.
I love it when it happens.
Yeah. So basically we have to put on the internet certain financial information that the state deems
they want to see. Let me interrupt you for a minute. Those of you that are listeners from other cities, and Dearborn in particular, all this pertains to you as well.
Oh, yeah, state revenue sharing is going down everywhere.
There's nothing mysterious about this. How would I don't know if it has to do with our population or if that has a factor in how that works. I think it does.
Yes, it does.
I remember Bob Constant trying to explain it to me. it's good to know all these things in spite of the fact you can't do anything about them. At least you know what they're talking about. But this is an important part, and the governor is now playing a game of Russian roulette with us on this statutory part, making us do certain things in order to qualify for that statutory part. And that's important because that's serious money, too. Vince, you can continue.
With each of the three parts, you qualify for a third of it. In our case, it's around $800,000. So obviously, we qualified for the first part. And we'll end up qualifying for all of it. The next part is...
And that total is what, 800,000
constitutional? Around 800,000.
For constitutional?
No, for the
statutory.
EVIP, yeah.
And the other part?
The other part would be about about 3.4 million. The combination of the two is... No, it's about 4 million for the constitutional. So the combination of the two is about 4.8. Now, that's not what's in our budget, if that's what you're looking at.
Oh, yes.
Okay?
Right. No, I'm looking at the adopted
budget.
When
we put the budget together, we weren't sure on how we'd qualify for the EVIP, so we were very conservative.
What did we do for it then, Vince?
Well, basically, we took the constitutional and added about $150,000 for the statutory piece, because at the time we were putting our budget together,
so that's where
the talk was to get to eliminate most of it. So, and
so
then these other changes came in.
So, for
basically, we're going to be picking up about $600,000 more in revenue under the state share of revenue based on our budget.
Now, in terms of our budget for this year, because we have a shortfall, this $600,000 or $700,000 is going to be extremely helpful. And
absolutely.
Breaking out on June 30th, if we don't do anything else between now and then, what will our budget look like? We'll be half a million short, three-quarters of a million short, in round numbers, a million short?
Probably between $700,000 and $900,000.
Okay. So that's an important number to remember, listeners. Go ahead.
Okay. In terms of the state shared revenues, Vince, I know in education, since I've been in education all my life here at the college and in Dearborn, one of the very upsetting things is, number one, that the budget from the state to education usually comes in late. At the last minute, but schools have to budget ahead of that time.
Sure.
And then at times when the state was in desperate straits, like the last couple of years, a couple of months in, they said, well, by the way, we're not going to make any more payments. We don't have any. Does that ever happen with the cities receiving
absolutely.
State shared revenues?
Absolutely.
That happens there too.
That's very common with the statutory revenue.
Well, that's bad.
I mean, basically, I think every quarter they look at their revenue numbers and what's coming in.
Yeah.
And if it's not up to what they have budgeted, that number is then adjusted.
So when does
we've been
made
fighting
up? At the end of the year?
It's never made up. I mean, they just cut
you. No, they just cut it.
They just cut you. And you have to live with it. So we try to be as conservative as possible when we put our budget together, but sometimes it's hard to anticipate those type of cuts.
So we in Dearborn Heights, based on what you're saying, are looking at $750,000 this year that we need to find someplace, at least. Now, the next question I'd like to ask you, some people think that there's a little vagary in all these numbers, and maybe we ought to look for more for a cushion to make sure we're able to do that. Well, therefore, it's at least $1 million we got to cut. I don't know if trying to cut $1.5 million would be nice, but $2 million is out of the question, I think. So we need to find $1 million in 6 months, which is December, January, February, March, April, May, June, 7 months. Do you think that's possible based on you being on the mayor's team and deciding these things?
It's going to be difficult, I'll be honest with you. But
so we're going to have to make some strenuous decisions.
That's correct. Okay.
Closing.
And that'll help going into the future, too. Keep in mind, we did pass a Headley override.
Right.
And that should bring in about $3 to $3.1 million.
Well,
don't forget the property tax values are dropping. So it is $3.5 million, but some of that, not all of that's going to go to the general fund. So if we're talking just general fund.
Oh, that's right. Some of it is sanitary. And
right. So it'll be about $3.1 million. But that doesn't start being collected until next July. So we actually have to get from there.
That was my
from
question.
From here to there.
When's that money start? Oh, okay.
Well, the next question, which is...
And then in addition to that, we're in the same boat as Dearborn, but maybe not as
bad.
That we're still probably looking for $1 million to $1.5 million to balance the budget and actually putting something in the fund balance also.
Hoping it's state... shared revenues stay the same.
Right. Well, not
or
only
fulfill
that, but
themselves.
All the property tax values, everything.
Well, of course,
I mean, that's
right.
An ever-changing number.
Right.
It's
you know?
Changing down for our listeners to see. we said a minute ago, we're probably at least we have to find $750,000, and just now you said $1.5 million. What was the reason for that? I mentioned
you want to put some money back in the fund balance, so you have to keep a certain level of fund balance where we're going to have to get back to.
Right. Now, there's been some council persons that have been critical and said that I remembered being a council member, this famous August 15th when the mayor produced that chart. I actually held it up and showed it to the public saying, the numbers are crossing. Some people are saying they should have crossed before because we had a $4 million rainy day fund. And my answer to people that say that is that that's what rainy day funds are for, unless I'm a complete fool on the matter. You don't keep rainy day funds just so that you keep them and invest them. You use it hoping that what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years will right itself before what actually happened. They say I was hoping you'd give us a number of what our budget was in 2008 in money, like 2008 was 35 or 38, so that the individuals listening can have simple numbers and relate to, you know, when 2008, 2009, 2010, what were those numbers and what they are
now?
Well,
the 2008-09 budget was $38,200,000, roughly.
.38.2, okay.
In 2010, it jumped up a little bit to 39.3, and then in 2011, it dropped to 38.1. And our 2012 estimated budget is about $36.4 million.
I thought we were getting down to 35 or something that Plant Moran thing.
That's what we're still working on. I mean, we've still got to make decisions on where the cuts are going to be, but that's where we'll probably end up being.
So we're looking at 35 million, which is possible. Now, the thing I want to, you know, I ask these questions so the listeners, when they're listening, can make some sense out of complicated things. When we had the little meeting with Plant Moran, they did a very interesting thing. They took that $35 million and took $10 million out because many of those things are funded by millages. So when you take $10 million that are funded by some of the recent millage that we passed, some had to do with fire, sanitary, police, library or whatever, they tried to point out to us, which was impressive to me, and I think you as listeners and residents ought to know, the difference is when you take $10 million out of 25,
right,
35, you have $25 million.
Correct.
So that $1.5 million cut has to come out of $25 million, not out of $35 million. And that's why I like dealing in concepts. You need to understand that. Not only is the taxable, the income from taxes and the state's shared revenue sharing constitutional or statutory comes down, where you have to pick the difference from is 25.
It's a smaller number than
smaller
the 35 million, obviously, because you have expenses that have to be made, like your debt payments and things like that. And like you said, there are certain millages that are dedicated to certain expenses. So you're right. That $35 million actually comes down to about $25.
Right. I thought that was interesting in the meeting I attended. And another thing I'd like you to characterize,
PSAs?
Yeah. No, it's okay. We're running a little bit behind.
We've got to let Elizabeth talk, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Because later we're going to, let's have a PSA, take a break. Why not?
What the heck? All right.
What the heck? Let's promote the college.
All right. Here we go.
It's also the United Way, too. We'll
United
be right back.
United Way, okay.
My name is Mary Crafts, and this is how I live United. I've spent the last 24 years running a local catering company, but I felt a huge part of our community was being underserved. So what I do with United Way here in my town is advocate for kids and families that are invisible. I stand up for them and help them grow strong. I volunteer with a program where we go into people's homes and assess mother and infant well-being. and help bring change and opportunity into their lives. As a caterer, I make sure people are happy and well-fed. As a United Way advocate, I make sure people, especially kids, have a chance to thrive and succeed. One of these mothers once said to me, "Mary, you are making a difference, you know." And I thought, wow, that's worth everything. My name is Mary Crafts, and I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The 5101 Restaurant is Henry Ford Community College's innovative on-campus dining experience. The restaurant is operated by students and staff of HFCC's Hospitality Studies program and offers a learning experience for the students combined with a delicious and affordable meal for you. The 5101 is open Tuesday through Thursday from 11:15 a.m. to 1 p.m. and Wednesday and Thursday evenings from 6 p.m. to 7:45. Reservations are suggested and can be made at 313-206-5101. That's 313-206-5101. See you soon at HFCC's 5101 Restaurant.
Well, it's station ID time. It's a logical thing before we go on to another part of this, although it's ever interesting. You are listening to the News and Views of Dearborn Heights, presented on the fifth Tuesday in any month as a part of WHFR forum talk show format, presented every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. Our guests today are the City of Dearborn Heights Controller, Vince Marcari, our City Assessor, Barb McDermott, our Human Resource Director, Elizabeth Sabota Perry. We are broadcasting on WHFR 89.3 FM from the Henry Ford Community College, making waves from our studios here in Dearborn, Michigan, and I am your host, Ned Apigian. Now let's go to Elizabeth and ask her those same nasty questions. Elizabeth's question. Elizabeth is going to tell us something about a lot of things, but at first we'll talk about how many employees and retirees, the number we had in 2008 and through now, so that you could see how the numbers are going down. And the thing I want you as listeners to understand, if you look at the budget of the city, and we just got through talking about $25 million is the only place we can cut out of a $35 million budget for the next year, the future, you must understand that approximately 70%, it could be 68.7, I don't know what, has to do with employees, people. People cost the most money because Elizabeth's going to talk about health care as part of her, when we're talking about numbers of employees and then numbers of retirees. It's the benefits and the pension programs and the health care that cost a fortune. It's people that cost us a lot of money. And when the way you save money, unfortunately, is you can't decide you're going to clean the street maybe every 6 weeks instead of every 4 weeks. But the fact of the matter is it takes people to run the operation. You can reach a point of diminishing returns when you need so many people in order to do what you have to do. So the first thing I want to ask Elizabeth, the number of employees that we had in those years, and I'm going to make my own little chart, and number of retirees for those, that's simple. And let's see what we have. Employees, retirees, 2008, 2009,
Ned, remember, this is radio. Our listeners can't see that chart. But
no, I can.
It's good that you have it in front of you at the next council meeting.
That's why I want them to have simple numbers, round numbers. You know, what did we have, Elizabeth,
right,
in
so
our heyday?
Here's the problem with doing it in a chart form is that with retirees, we have approximately the same amount of people that we had in 2007. We're around 250, 260 retirees, and we've been that way since I've been there because you add retirees, but of course retirees pass away, and so you do have quite a bit of turnover in the retiree population. So
that's interesting. I had not thought about that in that term, because their spouses get half their pension. How do you measure that?
It depends. And, at the time of their election, they can elect a surviving spouse benefit. So we have some retirees that I don't even capture because they weren't vested in terms of health care, because to receive health care in the city, you have to have 15 years and have a normal retirement or early retirement. So I don't even capture them in my numbers if they're under 15 years, because they don't have any health care costs associated. They may be someone that worked for the city for 5 years and gets a very small pension because they went on and did other things.
So you have to categorize pensioners by minor pensioner, major pensioners, and then a pensioner that has spouses.
Right.
And whether they haven't, oh my God.
And then with me too, is that you'll find that if someone is a pension recipient, the pension recipient passes away, but they have a spouse, the spouse will continue to get a pension, but they may come off, for the surviving spouse benefit, but they may come off of my books because they may remarry, and once they remarry, then they no longer have the health care benefits. They forfeit those benefits.
That's why they're not marrying.
My numbers look always the same. The other problem is that today, as of today, when I left my office, we had 237 full-time employees. When I started in 2007, we had about 290 full-time employees. Now, if you looked at my total numbers, it looks like we still have a lot of people. But if you take Barb in the assessing department is a perfect example. She went from a full-time staff a couple of years ago to now just only two full-time people, and the rest of them are all part-timer. So on number-wise, from an HR perspective, it looks like she has just as many employees, but part-timers are getting paid much less in terms of a salary because they're getting an hourly rate, and then we do not have any pension, no pension credits that they receive, no health care benefits.
Okay, that's a 20% reduction doing the math in 5 years. I assume 2008 was the
right,
you came
right,
in 2007,
right.
You
yeah,
said. So.
Yeah.
Now, that's, I thought we had a number of 218. What's that number? That's the fire and the police?
Well,
no.
Today you have 76 police, and then you have 38 in the fire department. So that's actual. That isn't quite your budget. You have 78 that's budgeted in police, and you have 47 that are budgeted in the fire department. But we've had a lot of people in the fire department elect for retirement, and so that's why we have not filled any of the open positions
so
at this time.
So these 38 people are the real firemen. They're not people in the office or anything, right?
Correct.
Well, what is that 218 number I've had in my head? No, it's a mistake?
218.
Mm. Because when you subtract the number of police firemen.
Vince has a good point. We believe that my number includes all total city employees, where a lot of times if you look at your budget, it excludes the library personnel, and it'll exclude the water budget.
You're probably looking just at general fund people there when you mention 218.
Well, the library, that's interesting. The library's funded with its own... Then its own budget or its own millage, and then we closed the library. I was surprised when I found out the library was closed because
the only library. So Carolyn Kennedy is still operating 7 days a week, and John F. Kennedy is not open on Fridays, but they haven't been.
Oh, well, I asked that question to somebody, and he said, well, all the things were closed.
Oh, they were closed over the Thanksgiving holiday, and they usually are. Usually even the weekend hours.
So when you take what I'm driving at here, when you take the total number of our employees and subtract police and fire, we're talking about police and fire are nearly...
Oh, they make up more than half of us.
Mm-hmm.
they make them more than half. That's why I didn't know whether to use the 218 number or the 237, and you take away 114. That's about half.
Yes.
Now, for our listeners, the police and firemen are the most expensive people. They have separate contracts. They have better benefits. Are they generally 50% more expensive, or 60%, or double, or what? Can you characterize that somehow? Because that's the thing that people like. We need to have this millage so we can maintain our police and our fire. How much more expensive are they?
Ned, if I can just...
Please do.
Again, from what I saw on the website of Dearborn Heights here, the regular police officers and firefighters, it seems like their base pay, and there might be a chance for overtime, I don't know, is about $60,000 each, just rounding off, for both officers and firefighters. No doubt certain other departments, depending on their jobs, the full-time people get less salary than that. I was surprised that that seems, like not very much for a job that has the risk involved, firefighters and police officers. They're, sometimes it's even a 24/7 job. I mean, it's all day and night, if needed. So that's not, I don't think that's.
In comparison to the rest of the people.
I mean, I don't know what base salary is for teachers in Dearborn Heights, but it's, it's about comparable, perhaps, for people with some experience. I don't know if you can compare. You have to look at the responsibilities to compare the salaries of the different people.
That's true, and I think you need to compare with other cities and communities, too. I believe that our police officers and firefighters are competitive or in line, as far as salary is concerned, with other cities that surround us.
I think in Dearborn...
And we still have one.
In terms of, it looks like the total cost here, Vince, again, on this form, it may be outdated, for the amended projected budget is that the police department, it's about 31% here. I don't know if it's still the same projected 2011-2012. In Dearborn, I thought it's almost like 50%. Of our budget for the operation, because we have a lot more officers, we have a lot more territory to cover.
Well, I think if you look at police and fire in our city is about 50%.
Right, together, probably. Yes.
I'm not sure about Dearborn's case. I haven't looked at their budget in a while.
Well, they're required to have a lot more of each than we are.
Yeah, I know they have charter requirements.
We do have charter requirements for both, yes, that have passed.
I thought that was on there. Past election, so I don't know how that happened. What happened?
It hasn't changed. I mean,
it hasn't changed.
No,
they do have minimum staffing requirements. Staffing,
right? For both. I think they can play a little bit of game and take some people off of active duty. I mean, let's patrol duty to put them on the desk or something if they need coverage there. And that's a small point of contention for some people in Dearborn, because they thought that minimum staffing meant minimum patrol officers. But there's a lot of things that have to go on in Dearborn. We have our own little branch of the Secretary of State's office, too, which is an extra little service. They haven't cut that out yet. I guess I'd like to ask a question, especially to Elizabeth. How much more potential, to save money? You mentioned a trend towards part-time employees. How much further do you think the city can go? Is it just a question of reducing services?
I think it is a question of reducing services. I know for my own office, when I started, I was one of five. We had three full-time, and then I had some part-time staff. And now I'm an office of two, and I have no part-timers. So it's just the two full-time people. And so, if someone's ill or there's meetings, the office is closed. And so I think as you pare back on staff, that you will find that you won't be able to keep the offices open without making an appointment, which for us would be very problematic, because when we have been hiring, we had, for one position, for a civilian dispatcher position, which paid approximately $28,000, we had 411 applications that we received, and we gave typing tests to, so we, physically met all those individuals, which is a lot for a staff of two to handle. It's a lot of traffic through our door. And so that, you know, that would become a real problem if we cut, let's say, the treasurer's staff by any more. You have to have, you know, these are people that are handling taxpayers' money. And so you want a checks and balance system. You want someone else at the window, two people, because you, you know, you want to make sure that all money transactions are checked twice. So when we're reducing staff, that's one of the things that we'll have to see what services, you know, should be cut. Just real quick, in regards to the police and fire, in terms of their benefits, police and fire, even though they have a separate union, we've really streamlined the health care benefits, at least. Those of us who are active full-time employees, we in general have the same benefits. You might have a difference if, you know, Barb has HAP and I have Blue Cross, but we have the same choices. So police and fire in that regard are no more expensive than any other employee. Oh, we have the same benefits.
I know this last past year you were working on getting all the...
Right.
Can you tell us something about... If we have about 250 retirees and 237 full-time or employees, full part, mm-hmm. whatever, our ratio of retirees, is this a normal thing? Can people, because I want to ask you about pension plans in the time we have left.
Well, it's probably...
We're pretty good.
Well, it's probably normal in terms of more established communities like Dearborn or Dearborn Heights where you have a 50-50 split. Of course, the... If you go out west, like to the like Northville, Plymouth, they'll only
have no legacy.
Yeah, right? They have a handful of retirees. So what you're going to find is that, you know, the healthcare companies our insurance plans rate us higher because we have a retiree pool.
And we have a retiree. We're an older community with older people.
Yeah, and so even when we went out to bid, so we went out to bid on all of our healthcare plans, which means that you try to get the best competitive price. Many companies like Aetna, Humana, that you're seeing often advertised, and oh, they can save you big money. The fact is that they decline bids of communities of Dearborn Heights and probably other communities that have a 50-50 ratio because retirees are more expensive in
Tell
general.
Us something about the savings you tried to do with our medical plan with our retirees. You did an excellent job, you and the mayor and the rest of his full-time trying to arrange that.
Yeah, so
simplifying and getting everybody on the same program.
Right, so...
But we didn't end up saving as much as we thought.
Right, right. Yeah, so the goal was to really save like $1.9 million. And so last July, we changed everyone. So that was July of 2010 of our retirees, and we really worked with our active employees to get everyone pretty much on... one of two plans. And so now for retirees, it's a little trickier because...
Why didn't it work out? You did what you wanted to do, yeah, but we didn't save the 1.9. We saved what? Almost nothing.
Well, and so the only thing is that healthcare, unfortunately, goes up at a rate that wasn't factored in. You know, it takes time. And then what also happens is maybe our population got a little sicker. And so where we're self-insured, so if your appendix comes out, we pay for your appendix to come out. And so unlike other places that are fully insured, that you pay maybe $1,000 per month for this family, whether they use the health care or not. So we're self-insured.
Yeah, I learned about the $100,000 limit. Right. Beyond that, that was the mayor gave that report. I never heard that before when we had the community meetings.
Right, so. That was medium claims. So anything under $100,000, the city pays 100% of that.
Dearborn like that too?
Well, I just know that Dearborn would like to have apparently there's some reasons why they can't work out the health insurance fixes that you have, especially on police and fire. I remember we were talking in general here with police chief in Dearborn and they admire what you've done over there, but they can't quite duplicate it for some reason. I don't know whether it's contractual language or other limits on that. I was hoping, Ned, we have about 5 minutes remaining before sign off, that we could go back to each person and see if they can solve all the problems of the city financially. If they have any suggestions or any hopes, give them each a minute or two. Is that an idea? Or is this
the problem?
Nobody wants to jump into those waters.
Well, that's a little unknown, but the question is, she has a lot more information about the Act 345 that costs us money. I think the listeners want to know, how does that work? We can't control it. It's a millage for police and fire that goes up automatically, and Barb collects it, I guess, or somebody does.
The treasurer. I don't do anything with the money. I just report what's going on out there.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually,
explain that so the average person can have some idea what this is. Okay. That's when you discuss anything like that, that's when all the firemen and police retirees come to council meetings. They want to know what you got to say about their... Could you explain how it came about and something about the numbers of it so that they have an idea? Because it's a very important number. When I remember one community meeting, somebody brought his tax bill, and he knew what the heck he was talking about. He wanted to know why that thing kept going up. And how does it happen, and how can we stop it? Or can you?
Here's my full disclosure. So I'm not on the 345 pension board, and it really these would be better questions probably for one of them or the treasurer.
Okay.
And so, but this is the best explanation that I can give. And so retirees are classified into one of two pension systems, either a general government pension system or the 345. If they're 345, they have to be police and firemen, and so that's what they would retire from, a police or fireman position. So now, for those of us who are in the general government, we do not contribute to our pension. If you put money aside in a deferred compensation, you have the option to do that. But for the police and fire pension, they actually can contribute up to 5%. So they have a contributory pension.
They have to or can?
They have to.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
But the general government folks do not have a pension system that's set up. You cannot contribute. So when
Jay, it's like yours. There was a time you were contributing as a school teacher, and then that stopped about 25 years ago. Wow. And that, when you're a contributor, your pension gets a lot bigger. That's for one thing. But the millage increases of it. Who can explain that? Can you?
Well, part of the problem in the Act 345 millage, because of the markets, the decrease in the markets. Mm. Okay, so that didn't help, and because of the decrease in the market, it increased the contribution from the city. So that affected the Act 345 millage. Plus, we have more retirees going into the system, okay? And the millage rates themselves going up, all of that is included, along with the decrease in the taxable values. In order to collect the same dollar amount, you need to increase the millage rate, okay, to keep that same dollar amount.
And we call that millage rate in our tax thing, as it does say,
Act 345. Yeah, and that's specifically and only for the pension plan.
So as our investment in those funds are not earning as much money, we have to compensate for that from our general fund?
Correct. But
and or there's a millage
from the millage it gets compensated from the millage only,
and that millage, the factor in that village, who figures that out? Is it done by the state or is it done?
No, it's a combination between the treasurer's office and my office. We see what the taxable values are and how much money we need to.
Now this
pay.
Is something that we adopted when the actual, we became.
Hang on one second. We do get an actuarial report from the pension plan every year that tells us what our contribution has to be the following year. And based on those numbers is how we calculate the millage rate needed to pay that.
Right. Now, this was done in 1963, adopted by the city, but not ever again brought forth before the people. It's done. It's automatic. Okay. You'd like to say something, Jane? Okay. Well, we're getting close to our closing, and I'd like to thank our city controller, Vince Marcari, and our city assessor, Barb McDermott, And we didn't give Elizabeth enough time, I don't think. At least I wanted to hear more from her. And Elizabeth is our human resource person. Hopefully, you've gotten a little simpler, better handle on some of these issues for the city. I think it's interesting always to try to conceptually understand what's going on and why. And there's some things you can control, and there's others you can. But when it comes to cutting, it unfortunately reaches where people cost us the most. And even when they're gone, they're still in the pension plan. You're never liberated from people and their expenses, their medical benefits. And unless you're a council member, you don't get anything. So.
You don't get any health insurance or summer's pay. You're a part-timer, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't have that in life anywhere. Never did. Anyway, now to our closing. Thank you very much for coming, and I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Heights News and Views, a live talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You have been listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of Henry Ford Community College, located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this and all of our other archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm and select the Tuesday date for the program that you wish to rehear by selecting the desired date. Thank you very much for listening to the Heights News and Views today.
This is Jen Cass, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Such a smart choice.
My name is Jamali Rashears, and this is how I live United. Education has been so important in my life, but lots of kids in my community don't have the same opportunities. I'm an advocate and fundraiser for my local United Way. I help promote academic achievement and get...
I'm Chris Moore on WHFR.
My name is Jamali Rashears, and this is how I live United. Education has been so important in my life, but lots of kids in my community don't have the same opportunities. I'm an advocate and fundraiser for my local United Way. I help promote academic achievement and give kids a reason to stay in school. We also put together events to raise funds and bring our message to the kids that need to hear it most. My name is Jamali Rashears, and...